The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next hour, I will be reading to you from Time Magazine. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com. That is gsuggsinsurance.com. Or call 919-875-8889. I'm going to introduce two different editions of Time Magazine. I'll be reading from both of them and possibly an additional. The first is dated April 28, 2025. As usual, both of these magazines are bordered in red on the front cover with narrow white inner borders. This one from April 28 has something of a lavender mauve background on the cover with Time 100 in numerals in white and block lettering and all caps superimposed upon this mauve to lavender background. An individual, Demis Hassabis, is pictured in a photograph, a young man with very short or perhaps a balding hairline head, also very smartly dressed facial hair, dressed in blue, even with blue frames on his eyeglasses. The second is dated April 14, 2025. Same coloration except Time is by itself, large block capital lettering in white, superimposed upon a multicolored background and featuring a photo of Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky in his presidential office. He is dressed in black. He has very dark, well-groomed hair on his head and facially. He has dark eyes. He's looking straight at the camera. The background is composed of probably draperies and wall covering, wallpaper or something like that. Additionally, there are many different indicia, perhaps from regions or armed services or something, in a frame on the wall behind President Zelensky. Time 100 featured Time's choice of 100 influential people. And I read several of those last week, and I will finish simply with a few that I have selected from the Time 100, or T100, as it's written here. T100 innovators, the first being Snoop Dogg. I'd like to spell that for you, S-N-O-O-P-D-O-G-G. Superfly, Spirit, by Hoda Kotb. And Kotb is an Emmy-winning broadcast journalist, and I don't know how to pronounce that because it's spelled K-O-T-B. Snoop Dogg once told me he's a moment type of guy, and if the moment's right, he'll grab it. I'll say the world's warmest, cool kid has been carpe dieming for more than three decades. With his signature Superfly charm, Snoop has remained consistently current and effortlessly authentic, all while rocking a jumpsuit. From his roots in gangster rap to his Cheech and Chong friendship with Martha Stewart, Snoop vibes with every generation. I watched him work his mellow magic at the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. Athletes and audiences could not get enough of his joyful spirit. I will never forget when gymnasts Simone Biles and Jordan Chiles spotted USA's hype man grooving in the stands and joined him, a little hit of fun at their stressful qualifying round. Whenever I saw him, he'd dance his way over to me. "Come on, girl, show me what you got." I dropped it like it was hot. I gotta say, there's just something about this guy that makes me and millions of his fans feel so happy and loved. Do I think Uncle Snoop is the legit top dog for 2025? Faux shizzle. Ma Yansong, Yansong. True Visionary by George Lucas, who is an Oscar-nominated filmmaker and philanthropist. I have been a fan of architect Ma Yansong from his earliest works. His designs never cease to amaze and inspire me. This year, he's unveiled projects that include a striking building in Denver that takes inspiration from canyons, and Fenix, F-E-N-I-X, a spiraling new art museum in the Netherlands that explores human migration. Like his mentor, the great Zaha Hadid, he has been at the forefront of a massive change in architecture that will transform our structures for generations. It is why I was so excited to collaborate with him on the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, which opens next year. I believe visitors will come not just for the collection, but also for the building. It is a work of art in and of itself. Ma is a great and willing partner in the creation process. It is a joy working with him. Wendy Friedman, F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, Measuring the Cosmos by Jana Levin, who is an astrophysicist. Imagine an infinite universe expanding in all directions. Visualization is impossible. Questions abound. But cosmologist Wendy Friedman is able to conceive of these heady abstractions in concrete, physical terms. Remarkably, she's also managed to measure the actual expansion of the universe, observing its rate and its acceleration since the early universe. Seen in her measurements is the pressure of dark energy driving the expansion even faster. From afar, as a graduate student in the 90s, I watched Wendy's quiet tenacity and astounding composure as she presented her results, then controversial, to a pressurized storm of critique. Calmly, she described the observations and her conclusions as she found herself at the epicenter of one of modern cosmology's most significant debates, that of the universe's age. A consistent history of our universe began to emerge with a clarity that exposed other conundrums. Today, Wendy's again at the center of a tension thrumming at the nexus of our understanding of the early universe, its expansion, and the cosmos as we observe, all the while exhibiting her masterful calm. John M. Chu, C-H-U, Magic Maker, by Michelle Yeoh. Yeoh is an Oscar-winning actor. The first project of John M. Chu's that caught my eye was his documentary on Justin Bieber. John saw beyond the tabloid stories about Justin's relationships and scandals to the young man underneath, who was very dedicated to his craft and very lonely. I thought, this is a director who sees into the heart of things. Making Crazy Rich Asians, that's when we really bonded, and I started to appreciate how talented he was at leading a room with patience and humor. He is a visionary, so he knows what he wants, but he always listens, and he's never afraid to let you try things. When he called me about Wicked, I reminded him, I am not a singer. But that's the power of persuasion John Chu has. He makes you believe you can do the impossible. He coaxes what he needs out of us to help him tell stories, to push boundaries, and then he elevates our voices, okay, my voice especially, bringing joy to the millions who love his films. To this baby genius, who I'm proud to call a friend and an honorary son all at once, I will always be eternally grateful. Sky, S-K-Y-E, Perryman, P-E-R-R-Y-M-A-N. Taking the Government to Court by Kelly Robinson, who's president of the Human Rights Campaign. Sky Perryman works tirelessly every day to safeguard our enduring yet fragile democracy. When Donald Trump's federal funding freeze sparked fear and confusion across the country, Sky acted decisively. As president of Democracy Forward, she mobilized a rapid response legal team and filed the nation's first lawsuit challenging the freeze. Winning the crucial administrative stay and later injunction that halted it nationwide. Whether litigating policy in our nation's highest courts or speaking with Medicaid recipients in small towns, she understands institutional power structures concede nothing without pressure and demand from the people. When Sky took the helm of Democracy Forward in 2021, she knew the work ahead would not be easy, but was desperately needed. Her work is now more critical than ever before. There is no question that we are living through uncertain, unstable, and scary times for so many Americans. We are moving through a moment that requires bold, swift action. Sky has shown time and again she is willing and able to meet this moment. One more, perhaps. Larry Fink, F-I-N-K, Leading with Empathy, by Beth Ford, who is CEO of Land O'Lakes. What a year my friend Larry Fink had, already well-known, respected, and incredibly influential as a founder and the CEO of the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, that's one word, with the two words forming one. He took it to another level with three groundbreaking acquisitions, including the two largest alternative asset management deals ever. In a bumpy global environment, his voice has never been more important. I was recently reminded of what strikes me most about Larry when I joined him for a discussion about the retirement crisis. A third of Americans do not have savings to retire, and no word is more feared than retirement. Larry got energized around how we must be able to talk about uncomfortable topics like Social Security, health care, and the challenges we face. His concern was genuine, as evidenced by a backstage moment that was pure Larry. Two speakers were on stage discussing the risks taken by their union members, firefighters and construction workers, every day. Larry shushed folks trying to get his attention, noting he wanted to listen and understand. Then we were called to the stage, and where was he? Back with the speakers as they departed, thanking them and the workers they represented. Larry's humanity informs his influence, and that is what makes him truly special. I'm now retiring the fragments of the April 28, 2025 Time 100 edition and moving to contents of the April 14, 2025 Time edition. Time Off, The Superman Next Door by Eliana Docterman. David Corenswet, C-O-R-E-N-S-W-E-T, prepares to don the cape of the most famous superhero of all time. By Eliana Docterman. There we go, Superman Next Door. The new Superman, David Corenswet, resides not in Metropolis, but a suburb of Philadelphia. He's close enough to the downtown train station that his commute to Manhattan, he claims, feels shorter than when he lived in Brooklyn as a struggling actor. We meet at the kind of diner with syrup and hot sauce on every table, on a quaint Main Street that ends inevitably at a Wawa convenience store. It is an unusual home base for an actor on the precipice of a major breakthrough. Corenswet, 31, will play the lead in Superman, which hits theaters July 11, the latest film to take on the most popular superhero of all time. He moved to Pennsylvania to be near family, and now he's raising a one-year-old daughter there with his actor wife. Since movies now tend to shoot in Toronto or Atlanta, he does not feel the pull of New York or L.A. Actors, he says, can get away with being anywhere as long as you have a nice self-tape setup for auditions. He's easy to spot as he walks in. Cornsweat looks like, well, Superman. He stands at an imposing height, and a curling lock of hair falls in the middle of his forehead. Clad in a blue sweater and leather jacket with sunglasses tucked neatly into the collar, he asks the hostess if we can sit by the window. The first time in my years of interviewing celebrities that an actor has not requested a dark corner. He is refreshingly neurotic, picking at his nails as he admits that, as a student at Juilliard, he sparred with professors. Some teachers would say I was difficult because I love a good argument, he says, promising it was not born from stubbornness. I am happy to be wrong. I just want to be convinced. Despite being told he was too intellectual and too analytical for Hollywood, he was swept into the Ryan Murphy universe, starring in the 2019 series The Politician and in 2020's Hollywood. Before leveling up to feature films, he played the bad guy in Twisters last year. Before the shoot for that movie wrapped, director James Gunn called Cornsweat to tell him he'd won the role as the Man of Steel. Entering the superhero industrial complex is not necessarily the career boon it used to be. The genre's struggling, and Warner Brothers, for its part, has placed its hopes on Gunn's Superman reboot. There is a chance that this character will never let go of Cornsweat. Actors like Chris Evans and Hugh Jackman are still fighting to peel off the spandex of the superheroes that made them famous. Cornsweat knows Superman will lead his IMDb page, his Wikipedia entry, his obituary. Would this be worth doing if this was the only thing I do as an actor for the rest of my life? He asks as he adds milk to his coffee. I think the answer's yes. The knock on Superman is that he can be boring. He was raised by loving adoptive parents, has a smart and beautiful girlfriend, can beat almost anyone in a fight. Compared to Batman and Spider-Man, he is not depicted as having great inner turmoil. If he is invincible, what is at stake? Cornsweat answers his own question, citing famed Superman writer Grant Morrison. All the important stuff. You can be the most well-adjusted, well-intentioned person, but people will still die. You cannot save everyone forever. A few years ago, Warner Brothers brought in Gunn and Peter Safran as co-chairs and co-CEOs of the newly formed DC Studios to launch a series of films beginning with Superman. Gunn is best known for writing and directing Marvel's three strange yet successful Guardians of the Galaxy movies. He arrived at DC aiming to largely shed the ethos of the somber Christopher Nolan and Zack Snyder films and pitched the flagship property as lighter and brighter. The success of this approach will determine the future of DC films. Gunn offered Cornsweat the role on one condition. He noted his experiences with Chris Pratt and John Cena, saying they treated everyone with kindness and respect. It was non-negotiable that Cornsweat do the same. I've seen sets that cater to an actor or director's ego, and that is just not something that would happen with David, Gunn says in an email. He is Superman, even in his nerdiness. He listens to old jazz standards, like that's what he listens to, just as normal procedure. Like Superman, he is a simple man in complicated times. Corin Sweat does not share the goofiness for which Pratt became famous on Parks and Recreation, or John Cena's affinity for outlandish gags. He exudes a self-seriousness appropriate to the Boy Scout superhero. I ask if his penchant for questions extends to directors on ultra-expensive productions that involve choreographing, flying, actors, a CGI kaiju monster, and filming in the Arctic Circle. I thought for sure the biggest movie-making machine is where those conversations are not going to be had, he says, and it turned out it was the inverse. That was due to Gunn's patience. Dave is a pain in the ass because he asks a ton of questions about every single little moment, says the director. But I honestly think my favorite moments were when I would get irritated by his endless questions and indulge him anyway. And then I would see him turn those questions into something magical in his performance. Corin Sweat still has calluses from all his time in a harness. He estimates he spent at least half his shooting days in midair fight or flight. Who was he battling up there? Who knows? Corin Sweat and I are in the unusual position of discussing a film neither of us has seen. Gunn is still editing. When I joke, Superman's billionaire nemesis Lex Luthor, played by Nicholas Holt, obviously is not airborne. Corin Sweat widens his eyes and shrugs. Gunn sheds a little light on the superhero-slash-journalist state of mind. He's starting to become successful at both jobs in the big, glitzy city so far away from home, he says. He's madly in love with a woman who isn't so sure about him, and he's made a few superhuman friends who like him but think of him as naive. All these new elements in his life have unbalanced him a bit, and he's tottering. We're going to see where he lands in terms of his values and choices. And Corin Sweat does tell me about Krypto, Superman's fluffy caped dog, whose trailer debut marked the arrival of a warmer, fuzzier DC. A dog named Jolene stood in for the super pet. She always trotted onto the set to the tune of Dolly Parton's iconic song. The final version will be largely CGI. The trailer features Krypto dragging Superman across a frozen tundra, a feat that even Jolene could not pull off. When I press for further plot details, Corin Sweat is genuinely apologetic. He has no idea what will appear in the final cut. Nor does he seem to feel particularly anxious about it. While Gunn told journalists who visited set that the pressure was making him miserable, Corin Sweat did not sweat it. What's the pressure? Pressure to be good? I definitely want to be good, he says, but I'm not directing the movie. I give James puzzle pieces, and he gets to pick which one goes in which place. I cannot take on the responsibility that James took on of delivering a Superman film to the masses, but James is the right person to do it. Corin Sweat is remarkably sanguine about a film that's been the subject of immense scrutiny. The trailer is the most watched in the history of either DC or Warner Brothers. Though he may not want the burden of Superman's success or failure on his, yes, broad shoulders, it will land there anyway. The actor does seem to have some sense that his life is about to explode, though the homebody has no plans to leave the Philly suburbs. Luckily, I don't like going out much, he says. He's taken aside co-stars like Holt, who starred in franchises like X-Men and Mad Max, to ask what his life is like. He's very unassuming. I feel very fondly towards him, Corin Sweat says, but he does not have anything particularly figured out. When I hear from someone who says they have it figured out, I think, you're sure now, but I wonder in 2 years if you will feel you did the right thing. Corin Sweat said in interviews years ago, Superman was his dream role. Even if he is not a career planner, he has manifested this opportunity for millions of people to see his work. There is an amazing, solemn responsibility to be the person to play this character, and there is no guarantee that I would have had a more interesting career if I hadn't, he says. I know a lot of fantastic actors better than I am who may never be seen by more than an audience of 50 or 100 people at a regional theater. And no matter how long he tries to remain incognito, he cannot escape that he looks like Clark Kent. A few people who are famous have told me, I deal with this, but nothing like what you're going to. And I do not know whether that's true, but Superman is a uniquely recognizable character. In 2023, Cornsweet's friend and Twister's co-star, Glenn Powell, crashed at his home while attending the lacrosse national championships. As they strolled through the stadium together, fans yelled out, Hangman, Powell's nickname from Top Gun Maverick. Cornsweet remained blissfully anonymous, but can imagine something similar in his future. With a name like David Cornsweet, it could be years before people would be able to shout that out in the street. He offers a knowing grin, but Superman gives you a shortcut. I'm off. Superman Next Door by Eliana Dockerman. Time off television review, Death Be Not Chased by Judy Berman. The first thing Molly, the protagonist of the new FX dramedy Dying for Sex, does after learning she has incurable cancer is run to the bodega for a green plastic 2-liter of generic diet soda. Then she lights up a menthol cigarette. Across the street, her husband Steve, who nursed Molly through her first fight with breast cancer a few years earlier, sits bewildered in the office of their couple's therapist. When Molly's oncologist called with the awful news, they had been arguing about her longing for sex and his refusal to touch her. Molly, played with impish vivacity and quiet resolve by Michelle Williams, bears little resemblance to the Hollywood archetype of the beautiful young woman dying of cancer. Neither a doomed dream girl like Ally McGraw in Love Story, nor a driven genius struck down in her prime like Florence Pugh in the latest Love Story riff, We Live in Time, she is no vehicle for some devoted man's epiphanies about what really matters. Despite her terminal diagnosis, Molly's story rarely plays like a tragedy. It is instead a brutally frank, disarmingly raunchy, often uproariously funny rejoinder to the perfect patient narrative, an affirmation of life through the insistence that there is no wrong way to face the certain death that ultimately awaits us all. The title Dying for Sex evokes trashy reality series like Sex Sent Me to the ER, but the show takes its name from the acclaimed podcast that the real Molly Koshan, K-O-C-H-A-N, recorded with her best friend, Nikki Boyer, an executive producer of the adaptation, about Koshan's radical response to her stage 4 diagnosis. Rather than resign herself to a chaste marriage with a husband who treated her as a patient more than a lover, she left him and embarked upon a sexual odyssey. By the time she died in 2019, she had explored her desires with more partners than most people would rack up in 10 lifetimes. In the brilliantly cast show, Molly briefly tries to make it work with Steve, a concerned yet condescending Jay Duplass. But when he bursts into tears as she goes down on him, she realizes that living the rest of her life on her own terms will mean parting ways with him. So she moves out and recruits Nikki, a radiantly flustered Jenny Slate, a theater actress who's finally settling down with a sweet single dad, Kelvin Yu, to be her caretaker. "I want to die with you," Molly tells Nikki. The request will upend Nikki's life, and she knows it, but she loves Molly too much to consider saying no. Convinced she's squandered her 40-ish years on Earth, Molly must decide what to do with her newfound freedom. A breakthrough comes in an appointment with Sonia Esco-Joulet, a cool young palliative care social worker. "Everybody has a bucket list," Sonia insists. "I have never even had an orgasm with another person," Molly blurts out, "and now I'm going to die." So begins said bucket list. With Nikki and Sonia as her wing women and support system, Molly throws herself into hookups. She discovers an appetite for dominance, and her fumblings lead to a moving encounter with an experienced top. She is not looking for romantic love, but accidentally finds it with the man in the apartment across the hall, a slovenly dreamboat known only as Neighbor Guy, a gloriously game Rob Delaney. He takes prurient pleasure when Molly scolds him for eating in the elevator. Having retired that edition of Time, I will reintroduce the March 24th, 2025 edition, which features Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari. And I'm going to look first at the column entitled Health. Turning back the clock, the new scientific search for youth by Alice Park. Later this year, a handful of people with a rare eye condition will receive a novel injection that is designed to quite literally turn back time. Non-arteritic anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, known as NAION, N-A-I-O-N, can cause sudden blindness when blood flow to the optic nerve is blocked. It is not clear what causes the condition, although diabetes, high blood pressure, and smoking are known to be risk factors. Some early evidence also suggests GLP-1-based weight loss drugs, such as Wegovy, Ozempic, Mounjaro, and Zepbound, might also make patients twice as prone to the condition compared with those not taking the medications. Whatever its cause, there are no treatments for NAION, and if it strikes one eye, there's a good chance it will also affect the other, leading to complete blindness. Scientists hope to change that with what is potentially much more than an eye treatment. The injection will test a new gene therapy that, instead of targeting specific genetic mutations that cause NAION, attempts to return certain optic nerve cells to their pre-NAION state. It would be the equivalent of pressing a biological rewind button that takes the affected cells back to a younger condition, one in which they have not yet been struck by NAION or any other disease. To some scientists, this sounds wildly ambitious. To others, extremely unlikely. Either way, it is just the kind of big and controversial swing that is emblematic of the growing field of science devoted to untangling and reversing what is a central fact of life, aging. The particular therapy behind the NAION treatment is based on the work of David Sinclair, a professor of genetics at Harvard Medical School and director of the Paul F. Glenn Center for Biology of Aging Research. He has spent decades trying to understand the wear and tear processes that age our cells, and is convinced that many conditions that plague us, from joint issues to metabolic processes that break down as we get older, could be avoided and even reversed. The real stroke of brilliance is the notion that you make the cell younger, and then it would be more resilient to injury, says Dr. Joseph Rizzo, professor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School and Mass Eye and Ear, who is leading the study. To me, that was the winning concept. Rizzo's team will give the treatment to 3 volunteers, all of whom have Nion in one eye. Each will receive an injection of 3 genes designed to reprogram the targeted optic nerve cells. If successful, the treatment could potentially be used for more common age-related eye conditions like glaucoma and even other chronic diseases like dementia, arthritis, and heart disease. And it is only one of a growing suite of potential treatments designed to address aging as scientists race to reverse time at a cellular level. Some, including Dr. Walter Longo at the University of Southern California, support the idea of periodic fasting regimens to stress cells into a more resilient, younger state, while others, like Dr. James Kirkland from Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, are developing drugs to remove older cells that refuse to die but damage healthy cells around them, contributing to age-related conditions. Their ultimate goal? To uncover something that has long fascinated humanity, the key to defeating, or at least slowing, old age. Even if it works, the Nion study would only be a first step on the road to fulfilling that fantasy. The genetic and molecular science making the trial possible has advanced by leaps in recent decades, but it remains a good way off from delivering a pill or injections to erase the damage we inflict on our bodies by just living. Stress, exposure to pollution, drinking, hours on the couch, there's no easy way to undo it all. But that's not hindering the search for a quick fix. Everywhere you look, there's evidence of a voracious interest in clearing away the layers of daily life and somehow rediscovering the elusive fountain of youth, whether by popping anti-aging supplements touted on social media, even David Beckham sells one, or adopting some of the often extreme treatments depicted in billionaire Brian Johnson's Netflix documentary, Don't Die. This public frenzy has unlocked a flood of investment from venture capitalists. Funding for longevity startups is up by 75% over the past year, according to CB Insights and pharmaceutical companies. The opportunity for them, if they can create new drugs or pioneer techniques to slow or reverse aging, is potentially colossal. Every single person on the planet is aging, says Dr. Mehmood Khan, CEO of the aging philanthropy Hevolution, which is based in Saudi Arabia, one of the largest funders of aging research in the world. This affects every organism. It is personal. But longevity scientists working today temper this enthusiasm with a sobering reality. Their focus is not on immortality or even adding a few more years to people's lives. It is ensuring that they spend those final years in as healthy a condition as possible. They are in the business of increasing health span, not lifespan. We are not focused on trying to work on longevity, says Kirkland, director of the Center for Advanced Gerotherapeutics at Cedars-Sinai. But it would be a welcome side effect. Hopefully we live to 100 or something like that, completely functional, and just not wake up one morning. The goal is to extend the number of years, however many they may end up being, during which people can live independently, actively, and without being encumbered by serious disease. That is not just a matter of semantics. Improving health span would have substantial economic and societal benefits. Researchers estimate that increasing health span by just 1 year in the U.S. would lead to a $38 trillion boost in the economy due to increased productivity from a larger, more vital workforce. And savings in healthcare costs in treating age-related diseases. Reframing longevity in these terms is catalyzing a renewed interest in researching aging. Everybody recognizes that at this point of increasing prosperity and increasing life expectancy all around the world, the burden of caring for older adults suffering from chronic diseases has emerged as one of the most pressing global challenges of our times, says Dr. Shailendra Basin, professor of medicine at Harvard University and director of the Claude D. Pepper Older Americans Independent Center at Brigham and Women's Hospital. By 2030, the cost of chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease, measured in lost productivity and healthcare expenditures, is expected to reach $47 trillion worldwide. We have an historic opportunity and imperative for governments, companies, academic and regulatory agencies to work together to modify the life trajectory, he says. Extending health span will be even more important than extending lifespan. For decades, anti-aging strategies have largely been confined to the beauty and supplement industries, where the promises were grand, but the evidence scarce. Science took longer to wade into the field, held back by the assumption aging was inevitable. It was not until the 1930s when scientists first demonstrated rats that ate drastically less tended to live longer. Scientific efforts to crack the aging conundrum attracted more scientists' attention. But dramatically cutting calories is not practical for most people, so researchers shifted instead to restoring specific organs or tissues. But those efforts were not guided by a deep understanding of how cells and tissues age. Advances in genetics and molecular biology, including critical discoveries about stem cells and how they develop to become different cells in the body, began deconstructing the black box that had cloaked aging for so long. There are currently dozens of studies testing whether certain compounds can slow down the many cellular signs of aging, like the DNA damage and oxidative stress you collect from too much time in the sun or exposure to pollution or toxic chemicals in the environment. Damage is also caused by tobacco and poor diets, not exercising, and diseases like obesity and type 2 diabetes. Some of the studies are exploring how the diabetes drug metformin, for example, might help slow down and therefore preserve the metabolic system. Researchers are also exploring ways in which the microbes that live in our guts and skin contribute to the balance between health and disease, and whether specific types of so-called microbiomes are more or less linked to health span. Kirkland focuses on yet another area, senescent cells, or cells that have stopped dividing and are on their way to dying, and the destructive signals they send as they expire. He's developing drugs called senolytics that target these signals, which could minimize some of the damage we all recognize as aging. Senescence is one of the fundamental processes of aging, Kirkland says, and each of these can impact literally hundreds of conditions. Positive results from such studies could potentially lead to medicines that may help chip away at the time people spend in poor health. No such products have emerged yet, but promising results from animal studies suggest it may be possible for certain tissues and organs. Sinclair, for one, believes there is a more unified, efficient way to confront aging. The Noyon trial is among the first to test his idea that aging is the end product of years of assaults on our genes brought on simply by living, as well as certain lifestyle habits. The net effect on our genes, which scientists call epigenetics, or the way genes are turned on or off within particular cells, is what is aging our cells, he thinks. So to address it, we should start treating aging like a disease. With that approach, he believes we can figure out how to erase the epigenetic changes that build up over time and give our cells their youth back. Time does not go away, says Sinclair. We will still age, but the challenge is to control the rate at which that happens as much as possible. So older age starts to look drastically different than it does today, without the extreme frailty, loss of muscle and bone strength, and deterioration of mental and metabolic processes that currently contribute to chronic conditions. Sinclair caused a stir in 2023 when he claimed to have reprogrammed old cells in mice that he had epigenetically aged and found their muscle and kidney cells were acting young again. Not everyone in the scientific community agreed that he had effectively aged, then rejuvenated, the mice. He used a technique for which the Japanese stem cell scientist Shinya Yamanaka had won a Nobel Prize. Yamanaka discovered a set of four genes that could, when delivered by an inactivated virus using gene therapy, revert adult cells to their embryonic forms so that they could theoretically develop into any of the body's hundreds of different cells. Before being treated with three of these genes, the mice in which Sinclair accelerated aging were grayer, frailer, and suffering from a number of age-related diseases compared with normal mice. Once the aged mice received the reprogramming therapy, however, the genes in their muscle and kidney cells began working like those in young mice. We saw a reversal of gene expression patterns back to a more youthful state, Sinclair says. He used the same process to reverse age-related blindness in mice as well. Currently, his lab is testing a chemical cocktail that mimics the gene therapy but does not require injections. It is still early, but so far, older mice fed the cocktail for 4 weeks have less frailty and younger-looking coats. The way he explains it, as mice age and humans, he believes, the information that cells accumulate over time starts to become biological noise. It is similar to being among the first to arrive at a cocktail party. It is relatively quiet. You can see who's there and probably eavesdrop on a conversation or two. As more people join, the noise level rises, and the sum of everyone's conversations becomes a cacophony. Similarly, as cells age, their epigenetic blueprint bears the legacy of what they've endured. Those effects don't necessarily alter their genome, but they do change the way genes are activated and suppressed, and how well cells can repair themselves. Sinclair theorizes cells accumulate these changes over time, and the burden of these alterations ultimately causes them to falter or function abnormally, a sign of aging. Sinclair calls it the information theory of aging and is dedicating the remainder of his career to proving it. But he and his research have their critics, who question whether Sinclair truly rejuvenated the cells, since he did not show the animal's muscles or organs actually functioned like younger versions, even if their gene activity was changed, without signs of aging. Not to mention the obvious question, what does this, any of this mean for people? Part of the controversy centers on the fact that the aging field is still trying to establish the standards by which it defines and ultimately measures success. Where we are right now is that we've got three or four leading classes of interventions that people think may be worth exploring in larger human studies, says Bossin. They include senolytics, as well as metabolic drugs like metformin, and compounds that boost nicotinamide, adenine, dinonucleotide, NAD, a molecule critical to how cells use energy. But there's very vigorous debate over what will be the primary end point for the clinical trials of these candidate drugs and how we define the success or efficacy of the drug. Ideally, Bossin says, what researchers should measure are not changes in a specific health metric, such as blood sugar or blood pressure, but a broader range of chronic disease incidence that better captures the overall ability of older people to thrive. If we can show that the onset of these age-related diseases, which is a quantifiable indicator, or their incidence is reduced, then that would be very strong evidence of health span extension, he says. But such studies would be expensive and require long periods of follow-up, which have hindered the field. Sinclair, however, remains convinced that his approach does slow aging and stands by the metrics he used. 200,000 people die each day from age-related diseases, and I am not going to wait 15 years, he says. Sinclair has long been a lightning rod of controversy in the field because of that defiance, among other things. Depending on whom you ask in the scientific community, he's either a pioneering scientist pushing the limits of our understanding of aging or a snake oil salesman. He has a tendency to make grandiose claims about what science can do to slow aging. The title of his best-selling 2019 book is Lifespan: Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To. He recently resigned from a professional group of aging researchers that he had helped to create after tension arose when he was quoted in a press release claiming a company he had created had reversed aging in dogs. Sinclair blames the sloppily written press release and has reworded the statement. I probably agree with 80% of what David says about the importance of the field and what it could be, and with the excitement and enthusiasm about the future and discoveries being made, says Matt Keberlein, co-director of the University of Washington, Nathan Schock, Center of Excellence in the Basic Biology of Aging. But in my personal opinion, he often gets ahead of his skis and sometimes says things that are not true. It does not help that Sinclair is also a serial entrepreneur, which some believe creates a conflict of interest between pursuing commercial interests and objective scientific principles. None of the companies he's helped to create, based largely on work from his lab, has led to a commercial product to slow aging, and some have shuttered before conducting critical studies. That includes his first venture, which GSK bought in 2008 to develop his finding that the red wine compound resveratrol helped yeast and worms live longer. GSK dropped the project, but Sinclair stands by his findings. What others see as failures, he describes as perhaps before their time. He and others are now focused on studying the effects of NAD, a jack-of-all-metabolic-trades enzyme involved in determining how well the cell functions. Basin is currently recruiting healthy, fit people to test NMN, another precursor that the body converts to NAD, with a version made by Metro International Biotech. Everyone will be put under physical stress with an intensive exercise regimen and randomly assigned to take the pills or a placebo. They will then undergo physical and psychological tests, running on a treadmill, having their respiratory function and muscle tone checked, and having their cognitive skills evaluated. The study will shed light on how boosting NAD affects people under physical stress, which is one of the factors that can indirectly contribute to cell aging. More research and replication of results is needed before any of this will help us all live to 100, but we are now living in an era where we have the tools to accelerate the pace of research, says Kahn. There is a recognition that with early intervention, we can change the trajectory of health span. That article, Turning Back the Clock, by Alice Park, was only slightly abridged. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's program is underwritten by G. Suggs Insurance. Please contact G. Suggs Insurance, your local independent agency, for trusted advice on home, auto, business, and life insurance. For more information, please visit gsuggsinsurance.com or call 919-875-8889. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have questions or comments, call us at 919-832-5138. That is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.